Welcome everybody to another episode of Brain Turds. I'm Monkey Arms.
And I'm T-Rex.
In the last episode, we had the privilege of having Tyra, your wife, on, who's an English teacher, kind of give us a little bit of a perspective as to how teachers and students and remote learning, e-learning, I think is what she used, comes into play and how it's affecting everybody with COVID-19 and coronavirus. Today, I am happy to have my wife, who is a nurse here in the great state of New York. And we're going to get a little peek behind the curtain as to how the healthcare profession, nurses, doctors, how all of them are actually being affected with COVID-19, coronavirus. And not only that, but how the government and lack of supplies is affecting their quality of care and work. So thanks for hanging out with us today.
Oh, yeah. Pleasure to be here.
Her name is Sam. I don't know if I said that. There is no anonymity when it comes to Brain Turds.
Oh, look at you with the big words.
I try once in a while. Sam actually works in a particular part of the hospital, not typically on the front lines of what would be considered COVID-19 care. What's a little bit about what you do and how's this affecting you and your department?
Well, it's looking a lot different across every hospital in the country. I think most people know at this point that there is going to be, and already is in many areas, a shortage of ventilators and PPE. Many lay people don't know what PPE is. PPE is personal protective equipment. It can be a variety of things depending on the illness, such as gowns, gloves, goggles, masks. During the Ebola crisis, it was stuff like basically hazmat suits they were wearing. All the hospitals across the country are inevitably going to run out of PPE, which is obviously a huge concern because we can't really afford at this time to have nurses and doctors running out of the equipment we need to protect ourselves to take care of all these patients. And those are things that Italy is facing right now. Definitely our president is not helping very much with saying that we have enough stuff and everything is fine. Especially in New York City, everything is not fine. There are nurses wearing garbage bags right now to protect themselves. The CDC has now said that should we run out of masks, it's okay to wear bandanas and scarves. And I was explaining to my fellow monkey arms here that I understand the CDC needing contingency plans and a plan Z when everything else runs out. But the problem with that is now a lot of hospitals see it as they don't need to fight for more equipment because they can just say, well, the CDC says it's okay to wear bandanas, so it's all going to be fine. So a lot of people have very big issues in healthcare with the CDC saying that these things are okay because it is going to impact us.
Well, it's what's frustrating is we've got like Governor Cuomo up here who's telling us that we need all these extra ventilators in New York State alone. And what was it? Was it 40,000?
It was in the multiple thousands, yes.
And then you have Donald Trump who turns around and says, well, I don't think they really need that many. And the other thing is we were talking about before, even with Tyra on the last episode, about how Donald Trump kept saying that if we had a greater idea of what was going on in China sooner than what we did, then we would be in a better situation now than what we are. And that's just not the case. I mean, the bottom line is we don't have PPE. We don't have enough ventilators. We weren't prepared for this no matter how soon we knew about it. But one of the problems is we knew what was going on for months. Not as soon as we would like to have known, but we still knew for months. And then you still had Donald Trump going up there saying, no, this is a conspiracy. This is a hoax. This isn't that bad. It's basically the flu. So regardless of how early we knew what was going to happen, we just didn't have the products, period. And what sucks is we wouldn't send our military out into a war without the proper gear. That's unimaginable. That would never happen. But yet this is a different kind of war that we're facing. And we're more than okay with sending our healthcare providers out there without the proper equipment. And it's insane.
The problem with this coronavirus as well, as I was discussing with my husband earlier, is coronavirus is not ageist. It is not sexist. It is not racist. It is a very small percentage of the population that requires ICU care and requires ventilators. But this small percentage can be anybody. It can be an 80-year-old with multiple comorbidities. And we're actually starting to see young people who have no health problems whatsoever being intubated. So it really seems to be kind of a case of Russian roulette as to who is going to require ICU care. And the thing that is very concerning to a lot of us is a lot of these people requiring ventilators are on the ventilators for an average of 11 to 21 days. And that's a long time to be on a ventilator. And the thing that is really saddening to me is that Italy has already started to do this. And there are parts of our country that are already starting to give preferential care to young people, meaning they're taking people who are older than 60 or 65 off of the ventilators, withdrawing care and letting them pass away because a young person has greater chances of survival than they do. And the entire thing is just really heartbreaking and saddening. And I don't think that this could be 100% preventable because of the amount of people it's affecting, but we certainly could have been much better prepared.
Well, let's just say there's no way that you were ever going to be 100%, you know, effective with anything that we tried. But the fact that people are out there doing whatever they want to do and making this making the curve go way up so that the medical staff can't provide help for people because they don't have the supplies, I think that's what's probably the most frustrating thing, is people aren't even helping themselves. I mean, I understand that, you know, you've got people in the other parts of the country that, like you said, now you're already starting to, okay, is this person worth saving or is this person not worth saving? I mean, we should have never been to that point because we should have never raised the curve like we did.
I wholeheartedly agree with that.
That's kind of disturbing to know. That's not something that I think we've been told. This is definitely a peek behind the curtain. We're under the impression that we are doing all of this to save as many seniors and everything as we can, which they are. I mean, people are, but it's just unfortunate that we're in a position anyway where you have to make those kind of decisions as to who is going to get a ventilator and who's not. And correct me if I'm wrong, Sam, but isn't there talk now about they're trying to find ways to hook up more than one person to a single ventilator?
Yes, there is talk about that. I personally have not heard anything from my own hospital about it. I don't think that we're quite there yet because we have not seen our surge yet, but it is coming. We have a rising number of ICU cases by the day. I'm in a very unique situation myself. I work in a procedural area, and as many people know, many hospitals across the country have canceled all of their elective surgeries and elective cases. I am still doing some procedures that are deemed urgent. But as a result of that, when we haven't seen our surge yet, many of our staff are being dispersed to various units of the hospital to have some retraining so that when our surge hits, we can be redeployed to those areas of the hospital that are being hit the hardest with this. So that is one of the concerns of some of our doctors, is nobody has the specialized training to do what we do in my department. So there is a concern that we will be redeployed to these ICUs. I myself came from an ICU and I have been back to that ICU several times. There is a concern that we will get redeployed and get sick and there will be nobody to do what we do. As far as splitting vents, like I said, we're not there yet, but I imagine we will be there within the next week or two. Unfortunately, both of the hospitals in my city have been very quiet regarding what our plans are. I think a lot of hospitals are doing that because they want to save face and look good. And there, as a result, is not a lot of information coming through to us who are on the front lines. I told my husband this morning, my hospital itself has said, we're running low. We have enough for now. And that's about all the information we've been giving. I have no idea when we're going to run out of PPE. I have no idea what our backup plan is going to be when that happens. I have no idea what the protocols are. They're keeping mum about a lot of this stuff right now, and I think it's frustrating to a lot of us.
I have a question. When it comes to these masks, I keep hearing that there are, especially like I've heard in Michigan, where they've got doctors and nurses who have to keep reusing the same mask. Now, how safe could that possibly be? Because can't you get something on that mask? Now you're going to carry it around? I mean, I just got a curiosity. What would you, how bad could that possibly be? I mean, you're going to be able to spread that outside the hospital by carrying that mask around?
Right. It's not safe in the slightest. Reusing masks is definitely not the ideal scenario. Every hospital is implementing different rules and protocols regarding that. There are two different masks that are being used in this COVID. There is the droplet masks, because this is something that is mostly a droplet precaution, meaning that you can use just a regular surgical mask and a gown to protect yourself. And then there are certain scenarios in which you need to employ airborne precautions, meaning any kind of aerosolizing procedure. So a patient getting a breathing tube put in, a patient doing any kind of nebulizing breathing treatments. Those are the scenarios in which we have to employ airborne precautions, which is when you start hearing about these N95 masks that are in very short supply. And yes, our hospital right now, I believe the protocol is some of the employees, such as the anesthesiologists, who are at very high risk, they're wearing the same N95 mask all day long, and they're wearing a surgical mask with a face shield over it to kind of protect that N95 mask. So that way, if they come into contact with somebody who has COVID, instead of throwing their N95 mask away, they can simply exchange the outer mask on top of it out. I don't think that's a bad idea. I think it's the best that we can do for the time being. But you're right, reusing the masks is certainly not safe. I think everybody is just kind of at a loss of what to do otherwise.
Well, and you said it good earlier too. You said that we get it. We don't have the products we need. We're beyond that. It's like you said, John Mulaney making that joke about how there's a horse in a hospital. I didn't vote for the horse, but we're way past that. There's a horse in the hospital. I mean, we are past that. Now it's, what the fuck are we going to do to combat the situation of not having supplies? So, I mean, obviously you're a nurse. How do you feel personally about the fact that you are required to go to work and care for these patients, and you don't have the protective gear that you need, or you soon won't in your particular hospital? I mean, personally, how does that make you feel?
It's a very morally conflicting time. And I think many nurses that I work with feel that way, because what do you do in this scenario? Fight the man? Like, we can't fight the man. This is happening in every hospital across the country. And I'm so morally torn about this, because I don't want to quit my job, because one, I need the income. And even if I didn't need the income, what do you do? I sacrifice my own personal health and safety to take care of these patients. And there are some nurses who are leaving their jobs for that very reason, and I do not blame them in the slightest. But if every single nurse and doctor quits their jobs, who is going to take care of all these people that are dying? I hate to even try to compare myself to a soldier going to war, but in a way, that is what it feels like, because I am putting my own personal safety at risk. Not yet, because we haven't run out of PPE, but we will. And at that point, I'm putting myself at risk every day to take care of my patients. And as I said before, there is a very, very small percent chance that I would require ICU care, but there are young people who are being getting breathing tubes from this. And that is a very real concern of mine. And it's a very morally conflicting thing. And I know several people in my department feel the same way.
Well, I think you can go ahead and say that you're on the front lines. You can compare this to war. personally, I believe you can, because you know what? You're right. We don't send them. Justin's right. We don't send the military in without their fucking stuff. But yet we're willing to send people, I mean, nurses, doctors, into a hospital where we know that there's a virus that we still don't have a cure for. We have no way of stopping this. So yeah, we've got these fucking, don't get me wrong, I love football, but these guys compare themselves to going to war every fucking time they go out on a goddamn football field. So you know what? You have the right to say, I'm going on the fucking front lines. And if anybody doesn't like it, that's just tough shit.
It's a very difficult time, because I think most of us, not just nurses, but every person on this planet right now, is trying to find silver linings where they can, but it is also a very difficult time, particularly working in the healthcare field, because I think a lot of us are just very disillusioned, because we know how healthcare works. We know how suits and upper management works, and nothing, I would love to believe that things after this will change, but they won't. They won't. Even though the mortality rates and the transmission rates for Ebola and swine flu and SARS and all of the other past pandemics were much on a much smaller scale than what we are seeing right now, doctors and nurses died during those and nothing changed. Healthcare workers have been dying from these epidemics every single time and nothing ever changes. And it is just very, very disheartening and disillusioning to know that even after all this is said and done, I wholeheartedly believe that nothing will change and that our management will even pat themselves on the back and say what a great job they did. And it's just, I think it's really heartbreaking that not even just in healthcare, but in the setting of the whole world right now, it's always the little guys who have to pay. And it's always the millionaires and billionaires who somehow still get out on top every time.
Well, it's not just the management that's going to pat themselves on the backs and say how great of a job they did. It's the federal government as well. And I mean, thank God we've got somebody like Governor Cuomo, who I really believe has been fighting for our state and for our healthcare providers and doctors and nurses, everyone. I mean, even grocery clerks that are still technically on the front line out there making stuff happen so we can all still have somewhat of a life and get what we need. But you've got people in the federal government that are patting themselves on the back, talking about spreading lies about how we're combating the situation and getting it under control, and wants to fucking open up the country again by Easter. I mean, as someone who's working in a healthcare facility, that has to be infuriating, knowing that, yeah, New York State has more cases than any state in the country. We're also doing more tests than any other state in the country. But these big chunks of the country that Trump says he wants to open up because they're not as affected may also not be doing near as many tests. So we may work on the situation here and you're putting yourself at risk trying to help patients without equipment that you need. And then he wants to open up the country in April. I mean, that has to be infuriating.
Right. And it's one of those things that it just feels like we are in such a dismal, appalling state. And this year is already an election year. So it already was, I think, is a more stressful time for most Americans than usual. And then to pile this on top of it, it just feels like an avalanche that nobody can stop. Like, things are just so past the point of things being in control. And the person that we should be able to look to most in a time of need is just a sorry excuse for a human being, truly. And I don't want to end this podcast with all this doom and gloom. And I would like to reiterate, I am trying very hard, as well as others are, I'm sure, to find the silver linings, to find the small things that make this horrible thing slightly less horrible. And I would like to say thank you to the people in our community who are reaching out and who are trying to show their appreciation, not just for healthcare workers, but for everybody who is deemed essential staff during this time. For the people who are staying in your houses, thank you. For the people who are doing what they're supposed to be doing, thank you. To the local paint supplier who donated 6,000 N95 masks to my hospital, to the distillery of all places that donated a bunch of hand sanitizer and rubbing alcohol and all of that to our hospitals, thank you. To even just the local food places who are donating food to our hospitals, to the doctors who are buying us lunch to just make things a little better than what they are. I am seeing, as horrible and awful as this whole thing is, a lot of us, especially in my field of work, are coming together and being a family and being a community. And it does really mean a lot in this time. So that is something I am very thankful for.
Yeah, it's definitely important to point out the people who are stepping up. And yeah, that was actually something that's pretty cool, Mark. I didn't tell you that. One of our local distilleries actually converted into making hand sanitizers of all things. I thought that was pretty neat.
That is pretty cool. I guess here locally, to my wife's school, I guess the local Coca-Cola distributor actually donated a bunch of Powerade Zero to the families, because where my wife works, it's a pretty poverty-stricken school. So, you know, to help out, they donated some Powerade Zero. I've heard, you know, around my area where there are places that are donating food to people that are like in her school area where, you know, they don't have any money. So yeah, there are some uplifting things about what's going on. I mean, not obviously with the virus per se, but with it seems like community seems to be getting a little bit stronger, but fuck, this is a hell of a way to have to go about this. And I agree with Sam, we've got an idiot in charge, and man, it's just, it's nice to see some of the people actually stepping up, but goddamn, I'm tired of seeing these people running around and just saying, oh, you know, it's no big deal. If I get it, it's just a cold. Some of these people need to really wake up.
Well, that's one of the things that actually, yeah, Sam was talking to me about earlier today is, I mean, we are told that, yeah, if you're young, you're more than likely going to recover, but this is also still very new and we are still learning more about it. And there are people that are, like she said, getting on vents and not able to come off of them. So it is concerning, but even if you contract the virus and it doesn't affect you with great symptoms, you're asymptomatic, you still need to realize that you are a carrier. And so while nurses and doctors and grocery store clerks are all going out and doing their part, we have to do our part as well and stay home. And that's why right when my work closed down, I've been staying home. I only go out long enough to if I need something at the grocery store. And I think in the 2 weeks I have been off, I think I've only been to the grocery store twice. It is important. If they're going to do their part, we have to do our part as well and stay home.
Well, we've talked about it. When things that you can do while you're off, we go for runs. Me and you talk, you know, again, we're 600 miles apart, but we still go for runs and we talk and shit. And I've been out my backyard and doing stuff, and you've said, you know, you and Sam have went for walks and taking your dog. These are things that people need to do, though. I mean, if you keep staring at the same four walls over and over again, you're going to go crazy. But find little things to do. You've went fishing. I applaud anybody that's able to keep themselves sane through this. I mean, it's not easy. I'm struggling with this whole staying in at the house, but I'm doing my best.
Absolutely. And now is a time, I have always been very open and transparent about my own struggles with mental health and mental illness. And this is a very trying time for people who even in the best of circumstances struggle. And I definitely would like to encourage anyone and everyone listening to stay home, but also to be taking care of yourself, to do the things that make you feel good, taking a walk, getting fresh air. I cannot exaggerate enough how important that is, as well as I have taken a rule to staying informed, but limiting how much time I read about what's going on. I do not read about what's going on shortly before going to bed. Keeping any kind of semblance of a routine for yourself, I think, is very important just to keep yourself mentally healthy. And that is one thing that they have been telling us at my work that I'm appreciative of, is to do not hesitate to take a day for yourself if you need it, because these are very trying times.
Yeah, mental health is definitely going to be important, because we don't know how long this is going to last. I mean, maybe in some parts of the country it'll be opened up by Easter, but, you know, especially up here, they talk about a minimum of 4 months, 4 to 9 months. We have no idea, but it's interesting how in times of quarantine or in times of catastrophe that you do get a sense of community. People do feel like they're all in this together. I spent an hour and a half yesterday speaking to one of my old friends back in Indiana. Not you, Mark, no offense, but another friend.
Oh, man. Let's see how and, you are. Cheater.
It was just, shut up. It was just interesting because, I mean, again, we're 600 miles apart, but we're all going through the same thing. So it's unfortunate that we get these sense of community and brotherhood and sisterhood during these times of catastrophe, but there is a silver lining, and everybody is going to get through it. Mental health is important. Lean on people you can lean on, have conversations. Like she said, do what makes you happy, and know that there is going to be a light at the end of the tunnel. We may not know when it is, but this is the time to reflect inside, learn about yourself. I think everybody is really learning some decent things about themselves in this time, because you have no other choice but to look within and better yourself. Take this time to better yourself, learn a skill.
And even if you walk away with nothing else, if you're a deeply disturbed person like me, who is incredibly cynical, know that at least at the end of this, not as many people will have died as in the Black Death, one third of the world's population was killed.
There you go.
So, you know, there's at least...
Good God. I thought there for a second she was going to talk about me there for a second. Deeply disturbed.
You're disturbed. Wait a minute. Whole nother level, Mark.
Well, I can tell you, I have anxiety attacks, and I've been pretty good with them for a long time. Now, the last one I had was on a cruise ship, surprise. But Yeah, that makes
a good place to have one, especially now.
Oh yeah, yeah. I guess there's one out there in the sea right now that they left on March 7th, and there's like four or five people dead or something, and they can't find a place for anybody to let them dock. So that's crazy shit right there.
Sorry, I got distracted. We are recording this podcast up here in the dining room this time, so we have more space since we've got two people. And I look over, and the dog's just randomly staring at the wall, essentially. For no reason. I think quarantine is getting to the animals as well.
Hey, I got to get away from these people. I'm just going to stare at the wall.
Well, I mean, is there any other questions? Anything else we want to add before we wrap this episode up?
I just I've heard about these masks, these N95 masks, and the regular surgical masks. I just real quick, Sam, if you could you kind of like give me an idea what the real differences? I mean, is there like a huge, like visible difference other than it says N95 on it?
There is a difference between the masks. I do not specialize in infectious disease, so my explanation may be quite a little bit more convoluted than the experts. My understanding of it is that in a patient that is in droplet precautions, when a patient, which is a regular surgical mask, when a patient coughs or they have secretions, if those secretions get into your system, that is how you can transmit it. My very basic understanding is that when something is an airborne disease, such as tuberculosis, and this is also being considered airborne during those limited procedures I mentioned earlier, such as getting a breathing tube or a breathing treatment, what happens is those things, instead of just those secretions getting into you, those particles continue to hang out in the air for up to 1 to 3 hours after that thing occurs.
I did not know that.
So that is why
I did not either.
The N95s are so important. The N95s are actually a closed air mask system. So when you are putting these on your face, they're incredibly tight to create an air seal, and you were breathing your own little air supply within that mask. You should not be able to have any air exiting that mask because those particles are hanging out in the air for 1 to 3 hours after these procedures. So even just breathing that air can get you sick. And that is why the N95s running out is such a huge deal.
And that's why, so bandanas and material masks that people
they're
are
not
making,
going to do shit.
They're not
going to
do anything. And that's so, and again, okay. I think the layman like Mark and myself, we're familiar with airborne. We're familiar with the fact that some masks help more than others, but I didn't even know there is a suit tailoring company here in New York, in our city, that is now transitioning from making suits to making masks, but they did not have materials to make the masks. So your hospital donated a bunch of drapes. And as I was telling you that, you're like, oh, that's great that they're making masks, but that's not going to protect us against these airborne things. And I think you just did a great job explaining why that is not the case.
Yeah,
it is kind of the equivalent of sending a soldier out instead of with the bulletproof vests that they need. It's kind of like saying, hey, we'll make you these sweaters. I mean, the intention is great. And I love that they are willing to help and reach out. But it's not, in the grand scheme of things, really going to help. I said to Justin the other day, this is a metaphor that can resonate with most people. The chances of you getting in a car accident every day are very low, right? The chances of you dying in that car accident are even lower, but you still use your rearview mirrors, you still put your seatbelt on, and you still obey traffic laws because that is a very real threat. And basically, the government right now is giving us a rusted tin car that's on fire with no brakes and saying, hey, make it work.
Do your best.
That's kind of what this is like.
Yeah, I would say, you know what? You've been spot on with some analogies. I think anybody who regularly listens to Brain Turds can see the intellectual difference between Mark and I and you. You have used a lot of big words that we probably don't understand. When I go back into editing, I'm going to be like, what the fuck is she talking about? And I'm married to this woman. So, Mark, I feel stupid every day. I think now you're getting a taste of of what I live with. But no, I think you've done great with the analogies. I really like the sweater analogy.
That was great.
Do you have anything else that you want to add on here, Mark? I hope that my wife has made you feel stupid, but I also hope she has educated us. And
well, you know that, well, you've talked to my wife, so you know I feel stupid pretty much every day anyway. So I just appreciate Sam, you know, basically forcing that on me to actually understand that other people can seem to think I'm stupid too.
Well, I hope everybody feels more edumacated. Again, Sam, I want to thank you for coming on here. As always, people, you can follow us on brainturds.podomatic.com. We are on iTunes, Apple Podcasts. We're on iHeartRadio. We're on TuneIn Radio, Spotify. We're on Player FM now and Podcast Addict. That, again, I say it every show, that is not Pod Addict. It is Podcast Addict. If Mark can use it, you can use it. So please go on there, follow us, give us a like and share. Sam, thanks for coming on here.
Anytime.
And please stay well and don't bring any of that shit home. I'm sounding a little selfish there, but please don't bring it home.
Yeah, stay safe, Sam. We're thinking about you. So, you know, keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Peace.
Take it easy.